Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, we give you thanks for every good thing that we have in this life, from our minds to our bodies to our material stuff. And we give you thanks for our Christian family and our relationship with you. Please guide us as we seek you. And in Jesus' name we pray, and amen. Today, being the day that it is, I thought I would talk to you about some unusual ideas. I could even call the ideas presented today as kind of like mysteries. And so we're going to just have some fun with ideas. And I would say these are like pieces of a puzzle. Some pieces are going to fit and some pieces are not going to fit. Or they'll fit into the background or something else. So you'll have to judge for yourself what is important and what kind of things you want to pay attention to. So some things that I briefly talk about today, I have been wondering about for a long time, sometimes months, sometimes years, and a couple of things even decades. So let's look at some of these little pieces of information, call them puzzle pieces. Well, we like to look at different things to see what could be coming our way. And sometimes those things are difficulties, and because we want to save ourselves from various hurts or unknown elements of just living in this world, we try to figure out what might be coming, and so what we should prepare for. Now, it can range from the simple things like a flat tire or to a flat economy. And there are other odd twists and turns. And on this day, we're going to look at some different possibilities. And I certainly don't have enough information on these things to make decisions. I only see indicators of what just might be. And so I hope you keep that in mind and that you find today's broadcast a little bit interesting. And like I said, today's ideas all need more information before any conclusions can be reached. But it's still kind of interesting, at least to me it is. Now, an example of needing more information is there was a nuclear scientist, a researcher, who was working with nuclear bombs at the Los Alamos, New Mexico facility. And in his job, he saw large areas of thick, deep blue silicate or melted sand. And so this was very characteristic of the high temperatures that a thermonuclear bomb would produce. Years after this, he retired and he went to India. And there he saw large areas, like a whole valley, full of the same deep blue material. You know, call it rock, melted silicates. Well, he came to find out that there were also other places in the world which had this deep blue glass or rock. And no surprise here, he just naturally assumed that there had been a nuclear blast there because that's what he was familiar with. And so he assumed, well, this must have happened before Adam, where there was an intelligent race of beings on the earth, because after all, they had developed nuclear weapons, or so he thought. And then what happened? Well, they must have blown up the whole surface of the earth, wiping out the race, their race, from off the face of the earth. Well, now that's just one man's observation. And another man, a few years after this, he came along. He was an astronomer, and he observed the same deep blue melted silicate or rock. And he saw that it too was in different parts of the world. But his observation was that a large asteroid or some other heavenly body, again before Adam, had a near collision or maybe even a bump with the earth. And this near collision caused friction in the atmospheres, and so high temperatures developed. And so he decided that that is why those sands melted into that deep blue color, because of the high temperatures that existed because of the near collision. So I just say this because there are different ideas that we can have, and we form conclusion based on what we understand. But don't forget, there can be a third observation made here, and who knows what the answer is? It's just a matter of it's a question, and we should be mindful that there can be different answers to what we understand. So that's one topic I was thinking of. Another one is, who occupied America before Columbus? Well, everybody knows it was the American Indians, and that is true. But there was also Leif Erikson about 1,000 years ago. He came to North America just north of the United States-Canadian border. And this has been demonstrated by the remnants of the Viking settlement that has been excavated there. So it's clear that the Vikings were in North America at about that time frame. So what happened before then? Well, there is evidence of Roman items that have been found in America. And this is just so amazing, just surprising to me, because I clearly remember the article that was written up in an archaeological review or magazine. And it talked about how in southern Illinois, there were some Roman, this was in an below the surface of the earth cavern. And there were Roman jars in there, and there were many, many Roman coins dating from the first century. And they were in rather pristine condition. So what's the mystery here? How did they get there? Because nobody could tell. There wasn't enough evidence around it. But it is some evidence that the Romans knew about the land of North America. And the idea, a speculation, was that Roman Christians had come to America to escape the persecution that Christians were under. Now, we don't know what the answer to this puzzle is, but it's just one of those interesting things as to why there would be pristine Roman coins in the southern part of Illinois. It's just a good question. There are mysteries. Another mystery is, why are there skeletons of 8-foot to 14-foot tall, well, call them giants? Well, it's another mystery. And it's something that's quite puzzling, because there's been hundreds of testimonies and photographs about these 8 to 14-foot tall skeletons during the last 150 years, but you have to look for them. The evidence of this is not just in plain sight. It has been notable that these skeletons, by and large, and for one reason or another that we don't know, they just seem to disappear. Sometimes they're stolen, but mostly representatives of the Smithsonian Museum come by, and they say that they're needed, and so they've taken them away. But this has been a testimony of various people, and nobody knows what happens to the skeletons, because they've never been seen or heard about again. And this story has been repeated numerous times. So there's a question, it's a mystery. These skeletons are all pretty much with elongated heads, and some of them have six fingers and six toes. And doesn't that just remind you of the big biblical stories about the giant of Gath, or the giant which the man called Jonathan killed? Or, well, there's just stories, and there's also legends about this. But there are the bones and the skulls, and they have cropped up all over North America, Central America, and South America. If you want to look into that a little more, Steve Quayle is a Christian researcher and author, and he has brought forth much information about giants and the skulls, elongated skulls, and things that were found in the last century, or maybe two centuries. And he brings these things to public awareness. And like I say, it's a mystery. So Hey, there's another related piece to this story. And this is new. Oh, new. A couple of years old. And this is about the giant of Kandahar. And this is pretty sketchy because it seems like news of the giants, well, nobody wants this talked about. But this story has come from several sources. And people have been privately videotaped, that is, soldiers, because there have been members of the United States Armed Forces, like the Marines, that have been serving in Afghanistan. And there's the story that has persisted about one group of reconnaissance since Marines that actually shot a giant there. He was in a cave. And the squad that shot the giant shot him dead with lots of firepower. And so this squad was debriefed and told not to speak about this incident. And it's pretty narrowed down to 2002 that this occurred. 2002, you can certainly look up the giant of Kandahar and see that there is evidence for it. Evidence, you know what? Everybody has a different standard of what the evidence is, but the story goes it was a 12 to 14 foot tall so-called giant, and it weighed roughly 1,100 pounds. So if these stories are true, the bones, the skeletons, the other legends we hear about, it's a matter that what does that mean to us? Is it true or not? Certainly, I don't have firsthand information of it, but it might relate to the Bible being true, because there are stories of the giants in the Bible. And all these things are just kind of a puzzle that you have to put together. It's just a puzzle. Now, remember that I'm talking about thoughts that may or may not be true. And whatever we look at, we should examine it in light of remembering what the biblical context is. Because as a Christian, all things are seen through the light of the truth of the Bible. And so we can see that there have been giants in the Bible. There was Goliath, of course, and he had brothers, and they had six fingers and six toes. And there was Og, the king of Bashan. And he was apparently 12 to 14 foot tall. And there were the Anakims. Those were another race of giants. And they are indicated to be at least that tall, probably taller. But these are just puzzles. We don't have all the information. We probably never will have all the information unless they come out and visit us. But, hey, I'm just looking at these things. They're kind of questions in my mind. They are unusual, but they are possibilities. So, you know, the Bible also describes spirits and that they have a element of a real existence. And we can look to Matthew chapter 8. Chapter 8, and there were demons who were cast out of the demonics, and they were cast out by Jesus, and they asked to be put into, and Jesus did put them into a herd of swine. And that was such a distressing experience for those, I guess I'm adding that myself, for that those swines, that they ran off a cliff and drowned. So understand that there are some basic demonic elements at play here, and I don't know really how to describe it. It's just that there is some realization that there are some kind of demonic elements out there, and we should be aware that certainly they have been foretold. In our society, we don't have much of that dark demonic interaction that other societies do. We call them primitive, but maybe they just have a different understanding of what the basic elements in life are. They don't have the same distractions that we do, or who knows what the real answer is. But many cultures around the world have a great understanding that there are demons. They clearly understand that, and they fight, and there's battles that take place sometimes in the mind, sometimes in real life. So these are different thoughts, and I think that we can be prepared to look at them. And it's not that we have to believe them. I don't bring them up today so that I'm convincing you of anything. I'm just saying that these are things that I've looked at and I've wondered about, and there is evidence of why these things could be so, but I've never seen it. Maybe I hope I never do, but there are kind of questions, or you could call them mysteries. So these different thoughts do come into my mind, and you know, speaking about demons and such as that, I am reminded of the Large Hadron Collider. It's called CERN, and it's right on that border of Switzerland and France. Somehow it's literally right on the border, shared by the two countries. It's underground, 300 feet underground, and if you look it up, it says it's 17 miles of a circle where they have speed up the elements. I guess it's the electrons that they do, and they speed it up to like 99% of the speed of light, and then they collide them. So, and they do this because they are trying to observe what happened at the creation of the universe at that very instant. This, they're trying to understand it and reproduce it. And this is one of those things which is just so, it is interesting. It's interesting, but they do have elements of the demonic in it. And if you go back, if you look online, if you want to look up and see what they did for their one of their opening ceremonies, it clearly is demonic because they bring elements into it that make men, the workers, look like robots, and there are wild and crazy demonic beings. But I don't want to encourage you to do that. I just mean to say that it is something to be aware of. So CERN. One of the things I think is so interesting is one of the directors of CERN just a couple of years ago said that he expected and envisioned CERN as being a gateway for entities from another dimension, or even for us to travel to that other dimension. Now, this surely does sound dangerous to me. They're also talking about things like anti-energy, anti-matter, and they have some of it stored at that CERN facility, and many scientists around the world have said this is a dangerous idea. You should not be having anti-matter anywhere. So that's just one of those things that we can be aware of. I know I've thought that if antimatter was released, would that mean that parts of the Earth that it was exposed to would disappear? I know you're going to laugh, but so I've wondered, hey, maybe that's why the Christians would be disappearing from the Earth, because they had a encounter with antimatter. Anyway, that would be the story they would tell. So it's just one of those thinkings that I like to just have fun with. CERN. At CERN, they do have computer systems that are calculating how they can reach these so-called stargates to another dimension, or gateways or stargates, and how they can interact with other entities from other dimensions or going to the other dimensions. Well, it is a most important thing because they are they're in the process of using that extremely improved computer system called the D-Wave quantum computer. That is brand new, and as I've said in a previous broadcast on Christ Today, that these D-Wave quantum computers are working on reading one cube of information at a time. So a typical computer reads zeros and ones and zeros and ones, and my understanding is that there can also be a space in there that is, in effect, a zero. So there are two, possibly three characters that it reads. But with a quantum computer, it reads the four at one time and the eight at a time at one time. So it is several times faster. And then you put cube upon cube, and that makes for even a faster computer system. And they say that it is 1,000 times faster than our supercomputers. Now, I'm still waiting for some evidence to see this. But the point is something is being developed here. What is it? We don't know. But I think it's a good thing to keep your eye on and just kind of ponder it, see what the possibilities are, because it literally could be changing our life or even bringing that demonic dimension to us in this world. There's a question of is the pit in Revelation 9 opening up, that bottomless pit? Well, that's a question. And certainly, like I said, we need more information. We don't know. But they are playing with very important spiritual matters here that could have huge and traumatic differences in our life. Now let's talk a little bit about some other things. What are some other just plain going-ons around the world? I know I've been following the number of earthquakes that are going on, the number of volcanoes that are going on. Why, they're just increasing and increasing. And surely I can see this is an indicator of, Matthew chapter 24, that's certainly one that I like to look at because it's clearly talks about what the kind of situations that we could face just might be. It's a lot to think about. So Matthew chapter 24 and Luke chapter 1, they witness to each other and they talk about the things happening before Jesus returns. So earthquakes, volcanoes, all those things. And what do earthquakes mean? Well, they sure shake a lot, and they make a lot of destruction. I know one of the other things is the possibility of a tsunami. And with that tsunami, there's the Juan de la Fuca continental plates where they come together just off the coast of Oregon, or let's say California, Oregon, Washington, and just a little bit into Canada. Well, the scientists say have a history of having a big sudden break, and it's about due for a break. Will it happen? It could. Just like the San Andreas Fault could have another earthquake problem. Well, if the Juan de la Fuca plate has a slip, it could cause a tsunami that would go 50 miles inland and wipe a lot of things out. You know, it's an unknown. It's a really big unknown. It's just that it might happen. With volcanoes, another thing might happen. There is in the past, there's been a great deal of volcanic ash come out of volcanoes worldwide. And after a few decades or a century, it makes some really good farmland. But meanwhile, it renders the land that you were using unusable. And of course, there's the Yellowstone caldera that could be a huge mega volcano. It's just one of the huge things in the earth. It's called a super caldera. Well, anyway, I think of these things, and I think of the great amount of volcanic ash that could go worldwide, and that this would cause the sun to darken. And what that means is we could have a year without a summer. And what that would mean is that we would have crop failures. because not enough sunlight is getting to the earth to mature the food crops that we plant. And so, you know, I think of famine. I can't help it, and especially with Matthew chapter 24 and Luke chapter 21, they talk about before Jesus returns there will be famine. So it makes me just want to remind you that all these situations, whether there's a volcano or an earthquake that disrupts or stops our electricity production or generation or distribution, those are just things that I want to encourage everyone to prepare for the just in case. Now, I often tell you that this means have the basics on hand. And I think of wheat, sugar, oil, salt, and flavorings. That's what I think of because these things last and last and last. Wheat can be kept in their own 5-gallon buckets or 55-gallon drums. It's good to have, and it's a living, they don't kill it by grinding it up and turning it into flour, but it has a life force in it because it's a living grain. And you can plant wheat later and have wheatgrass out of that. You can either eat it plain or you can squish it and make wheatgrass juice, which is very healthy for people. And it has a very particular taste to it. And just remember, if you ever do drink that wheatgrass juice, you're doing it for your health, not because you enjoy the flavor, but I'm sure some people do. So, wheat, sugar, oil, salt, and flavorings. And don't forget your wheat grinder if that's what you're doing. And an iron pot, because everybody needs iron for their health. And I say a propane stove with a couple of 5-gallon propane tanks. That's on my list of essentials. Now, everybody has their own list of essentials for what they would do if famine did hit the land. Well, you just have to look in the matter and decide for yourself what suits you. What do you want to do? And a lot of people will have prepackaged food, and that's good too. You can have prepackaged food. It comes dehydrated or dried or all sorts of things. So why is this important? Hey, we're going to heaven. We're Christian people, but what we want to do is while we are on earth, we want to fit into God's plan. And a part of that can be to show compassion. It could be to feed hungry people. And it can be to spread the gospel message. And worldwide, there have been ministries that spread the gospel message when they feed hungry people. For some reason, people are just more interested and willing to listen when they are fed. No surprise there. So, at some point, there have been people who predicted that such things would come to this country too. It's definitely possible, and we could have shortages or transportation problems or all sorts of things can happen. And remember that there was the gas lines of the early 70s, and it just, the essentials got transported, but it still was something to overcome. That's one thing that could happen. We could have a computer system glitch or breakdown or attack. And I can't help but think of those two satellites that go over the United States every day from North Korea. Nobody knows what's on them. But, you know, there's just things, they're dangerous in this world, and that's the kind of things that I from time to time think of. And with this radio broadcast, I have an opportunity to talk about the what-ifs and the maybes. So that's what I do, because I would like to get everybody prepared for that just-in-case minute, that just-in-case situation. And in life, we do prepare for the unknowns. And the best example I can think of is we pretty much all have car insurance or house insurance or some kind of insurance. And to me, that's what the food is. It's food insurance. It's not that I want to cook the wheat every day. No, I don't like to grind wheat every day. On that manual wheat grinder, which I hope I mentioned, because if you store wheat, you will need a manual wheat grinder. Okay, but it's no fun to just grind all the wheat you want and make food with it, because it takes a while. But it's better to eat healthy food than not. And ground wheat, fresh ground wheat, is definitely healthy. As the ground wheat is exposed to the air, it does over time lose a percentage of its nutrition as the weeks go by. So it's not that it loses everything, no, but there's just some of those essential elements that get oxidized from the air. At any rate, see what you think about having some food stored up. It is surprising how much we eat if we only eat our food supplies. And we well want to make them interesting by having flavorings and different things. I know one of the things that I have liked in the past has just been any kind of a flavoring. Any kind of a flavoring when you're eating that plain old food. And that includes the simple things such as beans or peas or anything. All sorts of little flavors spice it up. So consider having a variety of flavors and flavorings. It's just what you want to do. So let's think about the economics of the country. We can see that there are all sorts of things going on now, and we're probably in the early stages of some kind of a big problem. But there is a great difference of opinion about what will happen. Will things continue? And we just don't know. We could just as easily have a breakdown of the system in 2 months or 2 days, or, well, probably not 2 days, but it doesn't have to be 2 years away, but it might be. And there's just things where the basics of our businesses are not sound. There's people are holding on to their cash for a longer period of time because they feel there's uncertainty in these days. And so businesses are not doing as well because people are not spending as much, and they're not going into debt as much as they were just a few months before or a few years before. And then we have a government that is so far into debt that, oh, it's just precarious. Now at the edge of $20 trillion. Yeah, I'll say it again. Million, billion, trillion. It's just so astounding. A million seconds is 12 days. A billion seconds is 32 years. And a trillion seconds is 32,000 years. I know the first time I heard that, I couldn't believe it. But I did the math, and yes, indeed, it comes up to be just about that. So we are dealing with some huge, huge figures, and if the interest rates go up and the Federal Reserve makes the interest rates go up, we will have more interest payments, and that means if we're paying interest, we will have less money to spend on other things as a country. So what will happen? Oh, we don't know. We certainly do not know, but businesses and the banks could easily have huge problems. Now, what would happen if they closed the door? Had a bank holiday, for instance, or if the businesses just in general kind of closed down, oh, we would have trouble upon trouble. There could be a government holiday if that happened, and this has happened before in other countries. I know a lot of people these days are talking about Greece. Now, that was a few years back, but it still did happen. Greece had an economy that just crashed. And what did they do? They restricted the amount of money that anybody can withdraw from the bank. And it was just basically enough to eat. There have been other countries who have had what is called a bank holiday, where the banks close and you can only access a little bit of money. There's just problems that could be right around the corner, and we don't know that they are, but that's what I'm doing today. I'm looking at things that might happen, And surely we could say, I don't have enough information, and I would agree with that. But that's what I'm doing today. I'm talking about things that just might happen. So in these days, when we have political parties that are not in agreement and cannot seem to make anything work, it makes a government problem or shutdown or holiday or whatever you want to call it even more likely. Groups of people, not just in government, but outside of government, don't seem to agree. There is more and more discord among the groups, and that does not sound good for the future of how we have to come together and agree, or it just is more and more difficult to reach agreements. So, businesses and our government could shut down for some period of time. Typically it's weeks and sometimes it's months if you look at things in history. And what would that mean for us? Well, it would mean nobody would be getting government checks or government payments. That just wouldn't happen. That's what a bank holiday is, or a government holiday. It just closes down and shuts down temporarily. What would we do if there was no checks coming? What would we do if we had no job? Because if the banks and the government shuts down, probably there would be businesses also that would shut down temporarily. And no job means no paychecks. So I have been just keeping up with people who talk about such things, and there are an increasing number of people who are saying that such an event is more and more possible, more and more likely. Now, you can't say, because the signs are not for certain. They're just indicators that such a thing is possible, and some people say likely. So, the way I look at this and would suggest anybody else do is you look. And if you see that there's a 10% chance of such a thing happening, then put 10% of your spare time and your spare resources into remedying such a situation. Now, if you think there's a bigger chance of that happening, if you think there's a 30% chance that something like a big old shutdown is going to happen, then put 30% of your spare resources towards it. And I know that everybody is in a struggle. I know that each one of us has a budget and has concerns and has payments to make. But this is a time when there are things available. We can go out and buy food. We can go out and buy things, tools and plywood, for instance. There is a lot of things that are available. But sometimes if there's a rush on something, it can be medical tape and gauze pads. And if there is a rush on that, they won't get resupplied for weeks, probably weeks, sometimes one, sometimes three. And so my point is, things are available today. If you see that there is a need for your food or your supplies, get them now while these things are available. Because if you wait until it's clear that there is a situation that you want to prepare for, well, these things just aren't going to be available. It will be the very few people who find that what they need is available at the store. No, get the stuff now. I heard just a couple of days ago that in the United States, we import half of our food from other countries. See, we're not self-sufficient. We depend on countries and transportation from all parts of the world. And sure, a whole lot of the grains come from Canada, but there's lots of food and greens that come from other countries too. My point is that if half of our food comes from other countries, and if we do have some kind of a problem, why, where are we going to get our food? So there's another reason to store up. Have some things on hand so that for that just-in-case situation. And that's why I like the wheat. Now, you can get things from other companies, and some people can't even think of getting a wheat grinder. They range in price. The price is kind of expensive, but not when you consider the price of an appliance. I think the cheapest one I've seen that was decent was $150. You would pretty much say $200, maybe $300 for one. Yeah, it's expensive, but so is a washing machine. So is a stove. Everything's expensive these days. But if you're talking about how do you get by if there's a serious situation in front of us, well, you're going to want one no matter what its cost is. So you decide, and you can also get just the prepackaged foods in a 5-gallon pail. Those are available from different sources. Whew. So just think of those things. Consider them and then do something. Now, I just realized I have another story I can tell, and this was from the... In the late 1880s, I began hearing the stories about chemtrails and what were they and why were they in the sky, and there was all sorts of questions. It's not that we really knew what they were about, but I didn't believe them. It didn't make sense to me. How could this be? And besides, I didn't look up that much anyway. I didn't see the things. But I was encouraged to look up, and after enough time, I actually did. And then what happened... By the way, the chemtrails and the contrails, they are different. Contrails are what we grew up with. They are the condensation trails, which appeared after a jet airplane flew by. And it is the condensation that comes out of the engine. And it disappears in just a few minutes. But chemtrails are different. Chemtrails, they last all day, more or less, and they turn into light cloud cover. And like I said, I didn't used to believe. And then it was about 92 and 93. That's when it was I saw, and I just happened to be parked by the side of the road, and in each of those years, I saw that two airplanes were making a tic-tac-toe pattern. It was a square. And in each square, there was about 12 lines in each direction. They were in the process of making a tic-tac-toe pattern. And they could turn their spray on and off. Well, after I saw this, especially the second time, I became a believer that there are chemtrails. And what does it mean? Well, I can't tell you. I don't know. But it's a puzzlement. And it's one of those mysteries I just wonder about. Now, those chemtrails were probably covering 10% of the sky. It's not like they were huge, but they were obvious. And it was just a puzzle. So after I saw that little thing happening, it made me realize, yeah, there is something to chemtrails. It took a few years to convince me, but yeah, then I saw it and I believed. Now, I still don't understand what it means. And no branch of the government or personnel are willing to discuss chemtrails or what a spray program involving airplanes could involve. I don't know. But I have to assume that the effects are not good or they would talk about them. Why, if this is so obvious that it is happening in a planned manner, why will it never be talked about? I don't know. But I know that in the last 20 years, I have watched the Sacramento Valley, the Central Valley, and I've seen the skies become full of chemtrails most days. And you can count often 12, sometimes 14 lines across the sky. It does seem to be beyond any reason that it would be. So what does it mean? I ask and I wonder and I just don't know. But I do see condensation trails, so I know those are still there. And I do see chemical trails, so it's obvious those are still there. So I know they're both a part of what's happening, but I don't know what it means. It is interesting because certainly it's there. Chemtrails could be decreasing the sunlight that reaches the surface of the Earth. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, depends on what it's for. But if our sunlight is being absorbed, it means that there's not as much sunlight reaching the earth, and that means that the plants don't grow as well. maybe that's why there's talk about famine in the world, because the sunlight is not reaching the earth. Hey, believe me, I don't know, but I do like to just look at these things and try to think, figure things out. When the answers aren't obvious, there must be some answer nevertheless. So we want good crop yields, and I don't know what else that means, but it's another reason to consider, what would I do without food? How much food do you want to have? Well, you just have to look at that, because that is an individual choice. Nobody knows the answer to that. There's just things that we see and we have to comment on and try to figure out. Nobody knows the answer. And some people will say, it doesn't matter because I'm going to be raptured out of here. No problem. The rapture will come and I'll be out of here. Well, yeah, it sure can happen. And it might happen. It might not happen, because there have been arguments about that very point for a lot of years by a very lot of people who are intelligent, and they have intelligent discussions. You know, there could even be several raptures. We don't know. Maybe they're close together. Who knows? It's a puzzlement. Smart people have had a lot of disagreement about just such things. But the point is if there was a famine, your food supplies would still be put to good use. It might be for the sake of your loved ones, or it just might be for some other poor people. Poor as in needing food. Well, anyway, give these things some thought. It is interesting. Oh, let's see. So there's been I remember having discussions about this when I first heard about it 30 years ago. And just about 10 days ago, I heard about it again from a different, way different source. This was from a woman on YouTube called Karen Hudis, and she was for 20 years a senior legal advisor to the World Bank and to the International Monetary Fund, as far as I could tell, primarily in Washington, D.C. Now, she gives a very interesting presentation. It is hard to follow because she delivers a combination of relative facts and irrelevant facts and warm and fuzzies and things which could only be true from some particular point of view, so other people wouldn't call it true. But there's a big variety of the things that she discusses. But the point I want to bring up is there is an idea that our United States Constitution is not in effect, because there was another constitution which superseded it, and it was a secret constitution in 1789. Now, I don't know about this. It sure doesn't make sense to me. But there's things about legal arguments. Apparently, this 1789 constitution would make each citizen, the term is chattel, or it is also security for a loan. And these things have been talked about for decades. I have heard about them. I wonder about this. And I don't know. But like I said, today is the day to bring up little odd ideas, and that's what I'm doing. So this is one of those things. Now, I talk about this because it always makes me wonder, what do these things mean? If there's a legal argument, well, judges have some really, really ideas that are particular and peculiar to themselves, because they, well, pick up one area of the law and leave another area of the law behind based on what it is their particular orientation is. So if there is some kind of a precedent for this, we just want to be aware that things could be different from what we think. And that's all I bring it up for. It's not that I believe it. Nope. But it's in a sense a stupid agreement, but yet we see things, or just think about it. You've seen legal opinions and decisions that have been made that really don't make sense. And this isn't an example of something that could be a legal argument. And what does it mean? Again, here, I don't know, but this is the day for bringing up these things. And if you tuned in late, let me tell you that today I am talking about unusual ideas. They may be true, They may be untrue, or they may be partially true. But I'm bringing you unusual ideas because, well, I think about these things, and it's not that I believe them, but I can see that there could be truth to a lot of different situations. So I say, hey, maybe you could give these things just a little thought and pay attention to some of the possibilities. Because there's just things that can happen, and we want to remember that our freedom has been given to us by God. We are one nation on earth that has been given our freedom because we recognized God gave us freedom. And why? Why does God give us freedom? Well, we claimed it because we want to be able to worship God according to what we see the best way to worship God is. And that is why many of the founders came to this country, is to worship God freely in the best way that they knew how. So sure, there was other elements of people who came to this country. There were all sorts of things that were elements as to why people came to this country. Now, it's just something that if you give it some thought, you'll come up with some ideas. But do remember, like one of the founding fathers said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance because, well, some people want to have control over us. And so, what do they say? They say that they can tell us what to do. And you know what? If you don't stand up for the rights that you have, people will tell you what to do. And you want to do this in a righteous way, according to biblical principles. So, just keep that in mind. Now, there is an event that is going on. Let's start off with. There's constellations in the sky, you know, the stars. And I believe that God put the original constellations in the sky, and they had an original meaning, which was to foretell the history of mankind and for God's plan of redemption for mankind through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. Okay, so for the constellations in the stars, they tell a story. Now, over time, Satan has corrupted the meaning and the intent of certain constellations, and he has adjusted our understanding of the characteristics of these signs. They still have some truth to them, but they're not true. They just have some truths. So, and that's where we get our modern astrology charts and astrology from. But originally, the constellations in ancient history and Hebrew history, the story that the constellations told were to foretell the history of mankind and God's plan of redemption for mankind through Jesus Christ. Now, what I'm bringing this up for is to talk about one biblical passage in Revelation. It's Revelation 12, 1 to 6. And this is the passage about a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now, the reason that this is so notable is because there have been researchers and astronomers who have looked into this. They have looked into the star maps. They have looked back. I know I've heard 5,000 years back and 5,000 years forward. So these researchers and astronomers have looked to see when this could possibly be, and it is centered around the constellation Virgo. And the only time that this situation occurs is now. It's now. There have been astronomers who have seen this for 10 or 12 months and have been talking about it. And so this is a situation where there is some examination that this Revelation 12 position of the stars could symbolize a symbolic return or birth of Jesus. And so there is speculation that Jesus will return to the world, and or it is the beginning of a seven-year great tribulation. Now, this is such a momentous examination that I just don't quite know what to say about it. But it is something which I say, have a look at it, because it just might be true. And if it's true, what does it mean? Well, let me say again, I'm not supporting these ideas that I am presenting. I am just presenting them to say that they might be true. Examine all these ideas in the light of the biblical possibilities before you form conclusions. Look at it all. And then, yeah, you decide and you think, what is the best thing for me to do? Actually do something. And yes, you can listen to this broadcast. By the way, thank you for listening to Christ Today. And I do sometime talk about this kind of thing, which is staying free and alive so that we are free to worship God as best we know how. And I view staying alive as being important so that we can present the gospel to the world and also to encourage our fellow believers. So I want to remind you that I am available on the podcasts. I think that's what you call them. But you can look it up on the net, and if you go to christtoday.org, all lower cases, no spaces, you will be able to listen to past shows of Christ Today. And sometimes I talk about these preparedness things, and sometimes I talk about the guests and the subjects that they want to talk about. So I do thank you for listening, and if there is something you'd like to hear or would like me to talk further about, by all means, please. You can email me at prepareforgod@usa.com, and that's all lowercase, no spaces. Certainly you can write me with a regular postal box, a postal service. It's box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. So I do like to hear any things that my listeners would like me to talk about. And remember to maintain your relationship with God through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.